1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On the Tuesday edition of the program, are the Cubs an enigma? We'll explain in just a moment, plus a brand new interview today with Jared Diamond. He covers baseball for the Wall Street Journal. We talk with him about the Baseball Hall of Fame voting results, some Cubs and White Sox and Cardinals news, plus MLB labor negotiations and what to expect for this upcoming season. It's a great interview. And it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Today's show is brought to you by State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. Here's the deal. When you combine State Farm home and auto insurance, save an average of $889. State Farm agent Ryan McDevitt is ready to help you combine home and auto and save in Chicago and the surrounding suburbs. Call Ryan today at 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or visit his website, ryanismyagent.com. That's ryanismyagent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this question. What's an enigma? According to the dictionary, it's a person or a thing that's mysterious, puzzling, or difficult to understand. We all know enigmas. I know a couple. Let me ask you this then. Are the Cubs an enigma? Are the Cubs mysterious? Are they puzzling? And are they difficult to understand? Based on the way they've been covered over the past 2 to 3 months, you'd think they were more than an enigma. You'd think the walls were burning down inside of Wrigley Field. Oh my gosh, I can't believe they let Kyle Schwarber go. Oh my goodness, Lester's gone too. They traded Yu Darvish? They got nothing in return. Funny how quickly the narrative shifts. See, the other day, the Cubs signed Jock Peterson to a 1-year, $7 million deal. I look around, see the reaction from writers and people who cover the team. And here's what I see. Oh my goodness. This is, without question, an upgrade over Kyle Schwarber. Wait a minute. Hold on. Back it up a second. 2 months ago, you were all crying because Schwarber left. He's a legend. I can't believe he's gone. Now, Jock Peterson's an upgrade. Wait a minute. An upgrade over a legend? That's what I thought. Then this past weekend, Nolan Arenado was traded from the Rockies to the Cardinals. And the Cardinals got an all-star third baseman. The Rockies got nothing, virtually, in return. But remember, 2 months ago, Cubs fans said, oh my goodness, the Yu Darvish trade, that was a joke. The Cubs got nothing back. They were swindled. Then I saw people say, well, actually, it makes the Darvish trade look pretty good. pick a lane. Which is it? Stop shifting the narrative. I've been consistent from day one. This team needs a rebuild. Anything that reminds them of 2016 needs to go. All of it. Every player gone. Have a new identity. Build up a new culture. Start from scratch. And in 3 to 4 years, he'll be great. That's all they need. They don't need to hold on to the past. They don't need people crying about Schwarber and Lester leaving and the team being broken up. They need real change. They need a rebuild. They need someone in there to stop appealing to feelings and to nostalgia and to start thinking, you know what? It's over. It's time to move on. And I just found it so hypocritical that 2 months ago I said, Schwarber's gone great, not a legend. Now today, people are saying, oh my goodness, Peterson, definite upgrade over Kyle Schwarber. I said, Yu Darvish trade, good for the team. 2 months later, actually, yeah, it was a good trade. Give me a break. I've been here from the beginning saying this stuff. And all you've done is tear me down. I'm sick of it. I know what's best for this team. Look at the White Sox. Look at what the White Sox did. They followed the Cubs model. The Cubs have to go back to their roots here. No more lamenting. No more thinking about what's in the past and 2016 and all of that. They need to rebuild. And they were doing a good job of that until they signed Peterson. I don't understand the fascination with Jock Peterson. I really don't. They essentially brought in Kyle Schwarber. If that was the case, why didn't you keep Schwarber? Why didn't you keep a fan favorite and a good power hitter for $3 million more versus bringing in Jock Peterson? Peterson last year hit .190. I mean, are you kidding me? How are you even on a major league roster hitting .190? Now, I know the year before he had an .876 OPS, the best year of his career, 36 homers, 74 RBIs. That's great. If the Cubs could get that out of Peterson, fine. But I don't see that happening. Peterson, for his career, is a .230 hitter, .806 OPS, similar to Schwarber. Hits home runs, strikes out, walks, can hit for average. Here's a quote from an article on the trade. Quote, Peterson and Schwarber have similar offensive profiles. They're both left-handed hitting corner outfielders. They have the same career batting average, .230, and on-base percentage, .336. Schwarber's slugging percentage is 10 points higher. Peterson's OPS plus is 3 points better. Peterson is the better defender and a year older. Both are significantly better against right-handed pitchers. What's the difference? Why spend money on Jock Peterson when you could have brought back a fan favorite? And why are Cubs fans not defending that fan favorite anymore? Oh my goodness, Peterson's way better. Really? I just read you that quote. They're the same. No one's better or worse. Why is there that hypocrisy? Why are we waffling? Why aren't we staying consistent? Peterson and Schwarber are essentially the same. There is no upgrade here. This is not an upgrade. This is not new. This doesn't make the Cubs a World Series contender. It's just a signing. And I don't understand why you wouldn't keep a fan favorite and go out and get someone eerily similar. I didn't really get it. The only explanation I could think of is to allow fans to come to the ballpark. There needs to be an attraction. Chris Bryant isn't cutting it anymore. Rizzo is old. Baez is striking out too much. The Cubs needed a new face to put on the field. They got Peterson. That's the only explanation I could see. Him and Schwarber are the same. But I'm just so disgusted at the way the Cubs have been portrayed here. I'm reading articles saying Ricketts should sell the team. This is an embarrassment. And everybody comes together kumbaya when Peterson is signed. And when the Arenado trade happens, people say, oh, in retrospect, Darvish deal was a good move. I've said that from the beginning. Stop being inconsistent. Think for yourself. Please, think for yourself. Is this a good move for the future? Think. Don't listen to everybody else. Think. Darvish, great move for the future. And compared to Arenado, extremely good move for the future. Schwarber leaving. Yeah, sorry, good for the future. It was a good thing. The Cubs aren't paying somebody $10 million to hit 200. Now they went out and got Peterson. Not a good move. No. Put everything into context. I feel like some people just find ways to go after the Cubs. Yeah, you don't like their owners. Yeah, Theo's gone. Retool. You could find ways to go after them, just like you could find ways to go after anybody you want. No one is perfect. But I just find it so hypocritical that the same people who criticize Schwarber leaving, who criticize the Yu Darvish trade, have turned around and they're now praising it. Oh, Peterson's better than Schwarber. Great move. Oh, Arenado in that trade. Well, the Cubs got a better haul, actually, with Darvish. Pick a lane. Stop being inconsistent. You and I both want the best for this team. We can agree on that. The best for this team is a rebuild. The best for this team is to get rid of the 2016 relics, look to the future, develop prospects, pitching prospects preferably, and be great in 3 to 4 years. That's the objective. That's what I want to see. That'll make them great. Holding on to the inevitable won't do anything. Trying to put together a contender in a year in which you know you're not going to win will solve no problems. We need to realize that. We need to be consistent about our beliefs. We can't be saying Schwarber leaving is a travesty, then turn around and say, well, Peterson's better. We can't be saying, oh my goodness, the Cubs were ransacked with the Yu Darvish trade, then turn around and say, oh, believe it or not, the Cubs won that trade. By being inconsistent, by going back and forth, you're never going to be satisfied. You're never going to be happy with what they do. There's always going to be a problem. There's always going to be an issue. And you'll never see this team where you saw them before, like in 2016. I didn't hear anybody complain about anything from the 2016 team. And there were problems. There were issues. They weren't perfect. But everybody bought in and they won. Everybody here needs to buy in again. I know they're not going to be a World Series contender. That doesn't mean we have to criticize the Cubs for every move they make and switch our stance in a couple of months. What that means is we have to be together and enjoy the journey. What happened to that spirit? What happened to being lovable losers? What happened to embracing the rebuild? Enjoying the journey. Remembering in 2012, 2013, as Joe Mather played outfield, that there was going to be a bigger day to come. What happened to that? Why is that gone? Why do we not believe anymore? Jed Hoyer's still there. He was there then. I know the Cubs are getting rid of some big pieces. And it's frustrating for fans. But in a couple of years, there's going to be new big pieces that you'll know. And you'll be excited about. Just like there were in 2012, 2013, 2014. There were new big pieces on the come up that everybody was excited about. Let's be consistent here. Let's understand and realistically assess where the Cubs are. They're not a World Series contender. They're a borderline playoff team, and that's okay. It's not a bad thing. We've grown accustomed to winning. The Cubs are known for losing all the time. Let's calm down a second. Let's take a step back. Let's remember what they're doing, I would hope, is in the best interest for the future. It might be unpopular in the moment, but as we've seen, as I pointed out, opinions have already changed. Now people are saying, you know what? It's okay, Schwarber is gone. Peterson's better. Now they're saying, you, Darvish, that trade, great move for the future. It wasn't like that a couple of months ago. Opinions are changing. I don't like that. I'd rather be consistent. But people are starting to realize little by little, this 2021 team is not great, and it shouldn't be great. And we shouldn't expect that. We should be rooting for the future. We should be concerned about the future. Not today, and not criticizing every single move we see the Cubs do. It wasn't like that before. It wasn't. Everybody bought in. Everyone bought in 2012, 2013. Where is that spirit today? I'm asking, where is it? I want to know. Why is it gone? Why is it different now than before? So no, the Ricketts don't have to sell the team. Jed Hoyer doesn't have to go anywhere. The Cubs are doing their best. Let's appreciate it. We could find ways all day to criticize them and to criticize everybody else. It's easy, because no one's perfect. But how about we all come together and realize this team's future is bright? Let's get through these next couple of years. That's my message. Stop instantly reacting and crying foul when these moves in the long run are going to benefit you, the fan. They're going to benefit the team. Let's think about things long term. Let's think about what it means for the franchise, not just what it means in the moment. More to come. Here on Sports Talk Chicago, my interview with Jared Diamond comes up next, so stay tuned. Hey, do you want to make some money this weekend? What if I told you I could offer you $250 to bet on any game you want? Here's what you have to do. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. You must be 21 plus. You must be an Illinois resident. You could bet $250 on any game you want for this upcoming weekend. Super Bowl's coming up. Great time to put down some prop bets and real bets on the game. NBA, college basketball, great opportunity here to put down a lot of money and win a whole lot more back. That's sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Talk Chicago, here with John DeBluel, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the author of Swing Kings and a national baseball writer for the Wall Street Journal. Please welcome Jared Diamond to the program. Jared, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I am hanging in there on a very snowy day here in New Jersey. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being here. What was your reaction to the Baseball Hall of Fame results last week?
I wasn't surprised at all. I think it was clear. It was heading this direction. Honestly, perhaps as far back as last year's balloting, it already seemed like to me there was a chance there would be nobody elected this year. And as 2020 went on into early 21, I think that became even more clear. This was a very strange ballot. It was a ballot that I admit made me happy to not be a voter at this point, because you look at it and you just see so many great players on it who have so many question marks and issues off the field. And I'm not lumping them together. I sort of lump them into two groups. On the one side, you have players who we know or suspected of using PEDs. And I think we realize at this point that those players have polarized voters. Guys like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens at the top of that class, and of course some others as well, clearly have polarized voters. There does not seem to be any consensus on how to handle them. It certainly doesn't seem like there's any chance that any of these players have a chance of getting to 75%. So that sort of eliminates a bunch of really great players from getting in. And then you have this other group of players who have other sort of off-field issues. Of course, Curt Schilling being the biggest example of this, his Twitter account, the things that he has tweeted that in some cases have been misogynistic, homophobic, Islamophobic, and of course, anti-journalist as well. A few years ago, he tweeted conspiracy theories about the election. He tweeted support for the Capitol rioters last month. Very likely those tweets have kept Curt Schilling out of the Hall of Fame, but you put it all together and it just makes for a very difficult ballot. And I think that's why nobody got in.
If you did vote this year, what would your ballot look like?
Look, I don't have an exact ballot. I haven't really totally looked through it. I know for me personally, I would vote for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and probably some other players who have been suspected of using PEDs. I do believe to a large extent this is a generational issue. I'm 33 years old. I grew up watching baseball in the 90s and into the early 2000s. And when I was a kid, everyone was using PEDs. It just was the game. I've never known baseball without PEDs in them. It's always been sort of my frame of reference for the game. And to me, I'm just speaking for myself, not putting guys like Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds and Manny Ramirez and even Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa into the Hall of Fame. To me, it sort of feels like it's erasing my really fond memories of baseball as a kid to just sort of not include this entire era because of PEDs. I think for so many kids that watch these guys play, they probably have the same attitude I have, which is, you know, yeah, maybe they did this thing, but they still played. They still were the players that sort of got me to love baseball, and they should be recognized as such. That's my perspective on it. As for some of the other players on the ballot, I think the one guy that hasn't necessarily gotten that much support yet that I would vote for personally is Todd Helton. I think he's a guy that I think deserves more consideration. I also think we'll get more consideration as his time on the ballot continues.
Where do you stand on A-Rod and David Ortiz when they appear next year?
Yeah, that's a little bit more, a little trickier of a situation for me personally. I think it's easier to draw a line with PEDs, sort of the pre-testing and post-testing days. For me, I borderline don't care at all about players that took PEDs before 2004, 2005. Major League Baseball wasn't testing for steroids. If Major League Baseball isn't testing for steroids, to me, that's sort of a tacit acknowledgement that they're okay. Right. I don't really blame anybody for using PEDs before they were outright banned and sort of tested for. After that, it's a little bit trickier, but I still think I would vote for Alex Rodriguez and David Ortiz, even though now David Ortiz is different. He never was suspended. Alex Rodriguez was. I still think I would vote for him. And the reason for that is, look, they're on the ballot. If the Hall of Fame wanted to ban players who use PEDs, they could make a rule saying players suspended for PEDs are not allowed to be on the Hall of Fame ballot. They already have a rule like that that keeps Pete Rose off the ballot and Joe Jackson from being considered. You're on the permanently ineligible list. You are ineligible to be voted into the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame made that rule. If the Hall of Fame wants to make a rule saying players who are suspended for using PEDs can't go into the Hall of Fame, fine. But other than that, look, he was suspended from baseball, Alex Rodriguez. He paid his punishment. He served his time, so to speak. And now he's in good standing with the Hall of Fame. And therefore, to me, his performance certainly makes him Hall of Fame worthy. And I would vote for him in as well. That's just me.
Jared Diamond here on Sports Talk Chicago. Jared, are the Cardinals the favorites in the NL Central now?
Yeah, no question. Yes. The NL Central has been, let's say it's been quiet this offseason. Maybe that's sort of the nice way of putting it. It sort of looked like, does any team want to go out and try to win the NL Central? And the St. Louis Cardinals said, yes, we would like to. So they go out and soon will add Nolan Arenado. It looks like you have a lineup now back-to-back that includes Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt. That's pretty great. Look, it's not like I look at the Cardinals even with Nolan Arenado and think, man, this is a great team. No, they're still not a great team. It's still a team, I think, with flaws. I don't think it's really not as good to me as the top two teams in both the NL East and the NL West, at least. But I think they've emerged as sort of the cream of the NL Central. And I don't think it's going to take, too many wins to win the NL Central.
Are you at all concerned about the Coors Field effect? Will he have the same performance in St. Louis as he did in Colorado?
Yeah, look, you never know for sure, right? It's always a question with anyone that comes from Colorado. And then you can look at Arenado's splits. I'm sure the Cardinals know way more about it than you or I do. But you can look at Arenado's splits, and certainly he's better at home. That's not a question. You know, he's a lifetime 985 OPS at Coors Field, 793 away from Coors Field. But there's a couple of things about that I think need to be sort of acknowledged. One of them, look, the Cardinals, first of all, have had great success in the past with a player that came from Colorado. We all remember the Cardinals acquired Matt Holliday, who had the same questions when he went from Colorado, first briefly to Oakland and then ultimately to St. Louis. He was fine, sort of an example of a player who was great in Colorado, showing he could be great anywhere. And I think the other important thing to remember is that splits when you play for the Rockies, they're not exactly as telling as I think some people think. Playing for the Rockies does impact your splits, in part because of Coors Field, of course, but also because when you go away from Coors Field, when you play for the Rockies and play half the season there, every Rockies player will say this, that it affects your road numbers, not just because you're no longer in the altitude, because things are just weird at Coors Field. Your body feels weird when you play half your games at Coors Field and then you go on the road. Suddenly you're a lot more pain. You don't feel right. Curveballs break differently. The fastballs run differently. The spin of the ball is different. And it's something that only players that play for Colorado have to experience because they're there for 81 games. They're there for 10 days at a time, seeing curveballs break a certain way, seeing the ball move a certain way, and then going on the road and the ball's moving differently. Other players don't have to deal with that, going to Coors for just 3 days and then getting out. So I think we could very well, we'll certainly see his home numbers come down, of course. He's not going to OPS, 2,000 at home or whatever. But I do believe that we'll see that the splits sort of come closer together now that he's not playing 81 games at Coors Field. And I don't have any fear that Nolan Arenado is not a great player. Nolan Arenado is a great baseball player, whether he plays in Colorado, St. Louis, or anywhere else.
What does this trade mean for the Cubs season and their chances in the Central?
So it'll be tough. It's not just this trade. It's also moves the Cubs have made throughout this offseason. I don't think you could really look at the Cubs and think this is the team that is really vying for a championship in 2001. You know, Jed Hoyer sort of called it a reset, not a rebuild. And yeah, I think that's sort of a good way of putting it. They're certainly not going all out to try to win this year. But that said, I mean, they're still the Cubs. There's still things you like about them. Like, you still are running out of lineup every day. That includes Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and Javier Baez. I mean, that's a really nice sort of core in the middle of your lineup. Their pitching's obviously taking a big hit. No Yu Darvish, no John Lester anymore. So I don't think the Cubs are just like out of it. I think they still have a chance to be good. And if their offense does what we think it can do, they still have a chance to compete. But certainly you don't get a sense that the Chicago Cubs are looking at 21 as sort of a championship season right now.
What do you think of the Jock Peterson signing?
I like Jock Peterson. What's there not to like? He's a good player. He's going to hit for some power. I think he'll do well there. I think he'll probably do well. He'll have sort of a bigger role in Chicago than he's had in Los Angeles in recent years when he was doing a lot of platooning, when he wasn't playing every day. Sort of that's the nature of the beast when you play for the Dodgers, that unless you're Mookie Betts or Cody Bellinger or Corey Seager, you're probably not playing every day. That's just sort of how they do business. I think he'll do well. Of course, he'll like playing in Wrigley Field after playing in Dodger Stadium for all these years. So that's the sort of move that tells you that the Cubs are not like punting. They're certainly not, like I said, they're not totally rebuilding. They are still sort of trying to win, and they still view this team as capable. And I guess that's sort of how you do sort of a small reset where, yeah, you start looking for the future, but you don't have to totally give up on the present. And that's sort of what I see the Cubs doing. They are still trying to compete in 21, but they're not going to do anything that they think will mortgage the future even one bit right now.
More to come with Jared Diamond in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Diamond here on Sports Talk Chicago. Jared, what's your take on the current MLB labor negotiations?
So I guess my first thing would be I would take a quibble a little bit with the word negotiations, because I don't think anything that's happening right now is a negotiation, because I think a negotiation by definition requires two parties to be participating in it. And there are not two parties participating in this conversation right now. Major League Baseball wants the delay the season, shorten the season. That's what they want to do. The players union does not. There is a contract in place already, the collective bargaining agreement, the basic agreement that calls for 162 games. And basically, if the players union says, nope, we're good with the status quo, we want to play all 162, start on time, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Major League Baseball has virtually no recourse to do anything about it. So look, will this change between now and spring training? Will suddenly MLB make an offer the union can't refuse and they're willing to push it back? Yeah, I guess it's possible. But as we sit here right now, MLB made a proposal over the weekend, and the expectation in the industry is that it's going to be rejected without a counteroffer. I don't think anyone expects it to even really warrant further negotiations from the players union. So I guess we'll see y'all in 2 weeks in Florida and Arizona, at least right now.
What does that mean for the universal DH and the other rules that we saw from last year? Will those still be in play this year?
They could make an agreement to add them, but as we sit here right now, no. As we sit here right now, the rules will be the same as they are in a normal year, not 2020 rules. The playoffs will be the old, you know, five teams per league playoff format. Now, could they come to sort of a side agreement to add these things? Yeah, I mean, they could, but based on the tenor of their conversation so far, I wouldn't count on it. But, you know, we'll see. They didn't add the expanded playoffs last year until, like, I think after the season started. So, you know, we've seen some weird stuff with these guys.
How do you feel about expanded playoffs? Did you like the format last year?
I'm not anti-expanded playoffs philosophically. I think there's a way to do it in a good way that benefits the whole industry. I did not like the format last year. I think 16 teams is clearly too many. You could maybe sell me on 12 or 14. Like, I don't need there to be expanded playoffs. I'm happy with the way things are, and I do love how the baseball regular season is what it is. It should be hard to make the playoffs in baseball, but to me, whatever you do, however you decide to tweak it, I think they need to make sure they are still valuing the regular season and that they're still valuing teams that are great in the regular season. The problem with the format last year was that it put these really good teams into this three-game series, which is just to be completely ridiculous that a team that wins 100 games would have to go into a three-game series against a team that potentially won 78, 80, 82 games. It's just, to me, that's just not in the spirit of baseball. So I think there is a way to do it, we have to make sure that teams that succeed in the regular season are still being treated with sort of the respect and reverence they deserve. Baseball kind of got lucky last year because just it turned out that the number one team in each league made it to the World Series. Los Angeles was the one in the National League. Tampa Bay was the one in the American League. They both went to the World Series. They kind of dodged a bullet because if they keep with that format, I promise you there's going to be a year before too long where the 102-win Yankees lose in the first round to like the 78-win, the Tigers or whatever, and it'll be ridiculous and everybody will hate it. So just something to think about.
How do you feel about the universal DH too? Is that set in stone to come to baseball soon?
I'd be absolutely shocked. I'd be surprised if we don't have it in 2021, if I'm being honest, but I'd be absolutely stunned if it's not part of the CBA starting in 22 as they head into negotiations. I think everybody wants it. And I don't mean all fans. I know there's fans that don't, some. I'm sure a fairly sizable number. But both the league and the union, I think, at this point are on board with this. They agree that it's good for the game. I'm for it. I was against it for a long time, to be honest. I was, purist, I guess you would say, whatever. I've totally changed my tune, I would say, in the last 4 or 5 years on this issue. I last year only solidified it. I have to admit, there was literally not one instance last season when I was watching a baseball game and thought to myself, you know, it would be great right now, the pitcher coming to bat. never crossed my mind once. So I'm all for it. I think it's time. I think it's time to normalize the rules between the two leagues. And I also just think we need more exciting players. We need more offense. No one wants to see pitchers hitting. It isn't fun. It's not exciting. It's not interesting. Let's just let it go to bed here.
Jared Diamond, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Jared, two more questions before we finish up. First off, the most memorable event that you've covered is what?
Oh, that's an easy one. The Cubs winning the World Series in 2016. nothing. I don't know how you top that that was just unbelievable, right? I mean, yeah, there's something fun when you know you are watching history happen, right? And that's what that felt like. So that to me is easy one.
And Jared, before we finish up today, last question, what's the most bizarre story you've covered in your career?
Most bizarre. Interesting. What qualifies as bizarre here? I don't know. I mean, look, the Astros cheating scandal was pretty weird, I have to say. Covering the Wilpons and Madoff has been pretty weird through the years. You don't ever expect to see something like that. Yeah, those are a couple that come to mind. I'm sure there's other weird ones I'm not thinking about, so forgive me, but those are the ones that are coming to mind right away.
Well, Jared, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to have you on, and best wishes as spring training starts up and the season gets going here in 2021. Thank you so much.
Man, I hope so. I would love 162 games, so let's hope for the best.
Great talk there with Jared Diamond, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Jared Diamond himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTalb, and Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and sportstalkchicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No!
Where are the turtles?